This is Hour 3 on the Daily Circuit. I'm Tom Weber. Coming up later this hour, the city of Minneapolis next week will hold a trans equity summit. We're going to have a conversation with some transgender artist activists here in the Twin Cities. That's coming up later this hour. But first, to the television. It does seem Hollywood has a renewed interest and fascination with TV in recent years and is actually making decent programming. And a new fall season is about to begin, so we're going to look this hour at what to expect, what to be excited for, and maybe more importantly, what not to be excited for. We will discuss what is also so different and ever-changing about television. We have two guests this hour. Neil Justin is the Star Tribune's TV and radio critic and is here in studio. Neil, thanks for being here.
Morning, Tom.
I'm glad you're here. Eric Deggans is NPR's TV critic, the first full-time TV critic NPR has ever had. So congrats to you, Eric, and welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for having me.
I'm glad you're here. You should tell me now. I want to hear from you as well. Call in what shows you're looking forward to and the shows we should stay away from. 1-800-242-2828, 651-227-6000. You can tweet me at WeberTom1. Please don't call or text if you're driving. So, Neil, I get that Orange is the New Black, but TV seems to be the new film, is it?
Well, I think in certain areas it is. It's certainly not in network television. But I think if you're open to looking at Netflix, looking at Amazon.com, and still looking at HBO and Showtime, absolutely. I think what television is able to do right now that the film business is not doing is kind of those mid-budget projects that Hollywood's kind of abandoned. It's either small independent films or superhero blockbusters. Those films in between, those really, you know, interesting dramas and romantic comedies are not being done. And that's left a hole that I think television, at least cable and Netflix and so on, are filling quite nicely.
So make a way to take what a drama that maybe 10 years ago they might have tried to make a movie out of, but let's see if we can make a TV series out of it instead.
That's right. For example, The Sopranos was originally, you know, created as a movie. And but I think people like Steven Soderbergh, who's pretty much retired from movies, is now full-fledged a television director. And I think he's being able to tell stories in 8-hour, you know, installments like The Nick, which is a terrific series. And I don't think he would be able to get the budget or the interest in a film about a New York hospital in 1900.
Eric, it's interesting to hear Neil say that because he's saying it's lower budget than what the film side of things would do with like the superhero movies. But it does seem, because the quality just seems so much better on some of these shows, that it's a higher budget than, you know, what we were getting with the 80s and 90s kind of run-of-the-mill TV shows.
I actually think a big part of this is about technology and about what platforms people watch their entertainment on. We've reached a point where people have the kind of home theater systems where they can watch an intimate character drama like Fargo, and it feels like they're in a theater. Except you don't have to deal with people talking behind you. You don't have to deal with long lines at the concession stand. You don't have to pay, you know, $9 to $15 a head to get into the theater in the first place. So I think a lot of these projects, like say Behind the Candelabra, that was a biopic of Liberace that originally was intended to be a theatrical film, and they couldn't get distribution, so they sold it to HBO. Now that's the kind of movie where actually I'd rather watch it in my home when I can, where I can really focus on it, than to schlep to a theater to see it. And it kind of makes sense that blockbuster superhero movies and blockbuster movies where the 3D is important or where the IMAX is important or where you really want to see it on a big screen, like Guardians of the Galaxy or something, you still go see those in theaters. But intimate character studies play really well on television, so why wouldn't you want to watch them there? And with a show like Fargo or True Detective or The Nick, as Neil mentioned, they not only get an hour to tell that story or 2 hours, they get 8 hours. Yeah. They get 10 hours. You look at a TV show like Broadchurch or Fargo or True Detective, and you can see they have earned that time, and it is a movie that plays out over 8 or 10 hours, and it's compelling, and it's really well done. And because people are winning Emmys, and it's making TV look better, and people are making money, we're just going to see more of that.
And that's a great point, Eric. I would also add that you can watch at your own pace. Yeah. You know, I'm getting to the age now where sitting in a theater for two and a half hours is kind of a grind. when I can watch on television, I can break up a two-hour movie experience right. into two parts. I think I watched Behind the Candelabra in two parts just because yeah. there was other stuff going on. Or I can sit and binge, and if I really am into something, I can watch. Right. I watched I had to catch up with Sons of Anarchy last week. I was behind an entire season. I watched an entire season in the course of 2 days. I mean, I don't feel very well after it. I wanted to, like, you know, strangle a cat, but yes, it can be done.
Get in a yeah. fight with Neil because he'll
fuck
you.
Yeah,
right, he's watching that much.
Well, but that's also. I mean, I get what you're saying. Yes, you watch it at home, but it also if we're going to find a frustrating point of this, Neil, on the binge watching side of things, is mm-hmm. that whereas if you have something like Netflix and you have your list of movies, when Netflix started, it was just a list of movies. You know, those are an hour and a half to 2.5 hours long. So that you go pop at a time. Now I'm putting things in the queue that are going to take 12 hours of my life
right.
to get through. It's only one item on the list. I'm the kind of guy who likes to get through a list, and I'm left with a 12-hour series to get through.
Yeah, well, hopefully it'll be a great experience. And the good thing is, with all these different platforms, and Eric, I don't know if you'll agree with this. I'm guessing you will. I'm amazed how good Netflix and Amazon are so quickly. I mean, it took HBO many years yeah. to really establish itself.
You're talking about their original series.
I'm talking about their original series. I mean, yeah. Amazon's just in their second season, and they already have a show that I think is the best show, the new season, Transparent, which is about a transgender who's trying to relate to his family that he's now a woman, played by Jeffrey Tambor.
Hmm.
It's the kind of show I don't think I would see anywhere else. I've never seen anything like this before, and that's what I love. I love television that takes me to a place I've never seen before. So, I mean, I don't know what you think, Eric, but it amazes me the pace and how quickly, especially Netflix, what a major player it's become in just really 2 years.
Yeah, Eric?
Yeah, well, I would separate Netflix and Amazon because I'm not all that impressed with the series that Amazon has done yet, including Transparent. Although I've only watched the pilot of Transparent, I haven't seen the other episodes.
Yeah, you're just wrong, Eric.
yeah. So I don't know about that. And even if Transparent's good, that's just one show.
Well, they also have Alpha House, which I like a lot. I don't know what you think of that.
Yeah, it's all right.
Okay.
Again,
a little difference.
I wouldn't compare those shows to House of Cards or Orange is the New Black, which I think are among the best on television. Anywhere. But what I will say, you know, when you talked about watching from a list or checking off your list, what has happened is technology is to the point now where you never have to watch a second of television you don't want to watch.
Hmm.
And that's the important part.
Yeah.
When you sit down in front of your TV set, if you've got a DVR and you've got a way to put Netflix on your TV, you essentially can program your TV watching life so you never have to waste time watching a show that you're not interested in. And if the show isn't that good, then you just move on to the next thing in your queue, and you're constantly filling your media life with things that you want to watch, that you find entertaining, that you're interested in. And that's the big difference that today's TV consumer has from all the generations that have come before, because every other generation has had to sit through stuff they didn't like to get to stuff that they like, and we don't have to do that.
Eric Deggans is with us from NPR. He's NPR's TV critic. Neil Justin here from the Star Tribune, also the TV critic there, radio critic there as well. And we're talking about TV. The fall TV season is about to start. We're going to get into here in a little bit the list of kind of things to look out for, maybe some shows not to look out for. But tell me what you're interested in as well. 1-800-242-2828, 651-227-6000. You can also tweet me at WeberTom1. Eric, one more point here on the binge-watching thing. I've always wondered about, well, not always because it's kind of a relatively new thing, but I've wondered about these shows where they almost create the show knowing people aren't going to watch it in real time on television, you know, House of Cards being one because it's all just dropped on Netflix in one day. So if you're going to watch 8 hours at once, is there any mechanical difference? Is House of Cards vastly differently written kind of mechanically than, say, a Law and Order, because they know there's that binge-watching factor? I've always wondered that.
I would say that what surprises me is that TV shows that are online are not that different from the TV shows that you consume on regular television. The big difference is that a Law and Order episode has to have act breaks for commercials. And House of Cards and Orange is the New Black and Alpha House, all these shows that are created for online, they don't necessarily have to have those act breaks. But here's the thing. People are trying to create television that can air on any platform that's necessary to maximize the amount of money they can make from it.
So even Modern Family on ABC, they have to have all the other devices in mind.
Well, what I'm saying is more, if you're creating a House of Cards, or you're creating an Orange is the New Black, or you're creating an Alpha House, at some point in the back of your head, you got to think, maybe we can package these episodes and sell them to syndication. And so if you're going to do that, you can't create a show where every episode is 43.5 minutes or every episode is 90 minutes long. You know, there are certain platforms where they need a half hour or they need an hour. And so you find that most of these shows, each episode is about an hour or about a half an hour. Most of these shows, they have the same sort of pacing, even though there's not commercials. And what I find with the shows that were created for online is that they make sure that there's a cliffhanger at the end of the episode to make you want to watch the very next episode. That's the most important thing, to end the episode in a way that makes you want to keep watching into the next episode. And then once you're into that next episode, they have the freedom to tell the story how they want to. They just want to make sure that at the end of that episode, they make you want to watch the next one to enable the binge viewing experience.
That's actually the thing I noticed, Neil, because I have to stand up and say I only recently started watching Mad Men. Mm-hmm. I missed all of it. I missed it all, but now I'm binge watching it. And I noticed that there's this mechanic of they tell the story, I get interested, and then 5 minutes before the end, they're going to rope me in. And I get that that's how it's always been. You had serials, you know, in the movie theaters back in the 20s, and he falls off the cliff, and you have to come back the next week to see if he survived. And I get that that's always been an element of it. But it seems to be, I don't know, hitting me across the face a little bit more with shows like Mad Men, where I have to come back now, or even these online, like House of Cards. My goodness, they really hit you over the head with that.
One thing that I think these shows are doing that's a little bit different, if not dramatically different, is there's not the pressure, at least they're not putting it on themselves, to have a big aha moment in every episode.
The big reveal.
Right, or there's some big, you know, plot twist or, you know, new twist that you didn't see coming. Mad Men's a good example of this. There are episodes of Mad Men where nothing really happens. and The Sopranos really started this, where you'd sit through hours and go, what the heck? Just what?
They didn't
and
do anything.
What they also did was do, you know, the traditional format was there'd be a big boom at the end of the season, a big cliffhanger, a big event. Now a lot of those happen on the next to the last episode or maybe two episodes before the end. And then there's time to deal with the aftermath of that before you sign off for the season. So that's one difference in terms of pacing that I've noticed over the years. And that might be frustrating for some viewers, but sometimes it's nice to have an episode, especially when you're binge watching, where you can sort of take a breath and sort of admire some other things about the series. Mad Men's a good example. There are episodes where, like I said, nothing really happens. But you learn a little something about characters' nuances. Yeah. You can appreciate the fashion of the show, the music, the look of the show. I mean, that's the best thing to me. I'm not a huge Mad Men fan, but I do admire the look. And as I said before, that show, it's taken me to a place I didn't know a lot about. And I love that that aspect of the series. I love the setting of it.
Neil, just
you know, I would say, too, if people, whenever you binge watch something, what I think happens is you tend to focus a lot on the plot. Because you want to know what happens next, and you want to know the whole story. So I would recommend that, particularly if you're binge-watching really meticulously put-together shows like Mad Men or Breaking Bad, that once you've binge-watched enough that you know that you've satisfied your desire to know what happens in the plot, go back and watch those episodes again and take your time with them, because there's a lot that's packed into those episodes that will reward a second or even a third viewing. And you won't be so focused on what happens next because you know what happens next. And you can enjoy the craftsmanship that they put into making those episodes, particularly the last 8 episodes of Breaking Bad. That was something I had to do for a story. And then I realized, you know, there's a lot of stuff I missed because I was so focused on figuring out what is coming next, what's happening next, what's happening next. Will Hank survive? You know, will Walt survive? What will happen? And then I went back and I was able to enjoy, you know, the craftsmanship of the episode in a way that I couldn't.
So, Eric, you're suggesting double binging, and Tom is starting to sweat. He's got this glazed look in his eye like, oh, no.
I have to put this on my Netflix queue twice now. I have to go through it all. Neil, Justin, and Eric Deggans with us as we talk about, well, we're talking a little bit about the re-magic. I don't know what the right word is there of television, but we're talking about some of these kind of new and exciting things happening there. But we're also going to look ahead to the fall season, 1-800-242-2828. 651-227-6000. Jeff is in Rochester with a question. Go ahead, Jeff.
I love this show. I've been wanting to ask this question for a long time.
Okay.
All of these shows that you talk about, and they're pretty good, they're on HBO and Cinemax and Netflix and expanded cable.
Mm-hmm.
There's a whole bunch of America that can't afford that.
Yeah, that's right. And I would say, if you're frustrated, you should be. We've been talking about how great television is on the platforms. If we look at the traditional network channels, it's dismal. I mean, it's absolutely dismal. I think this is the worst, in my opinion, the worst new crop of shows
really?
I've seen in 18 years.
Man, and Neil and I, we're going to be disagreeing. All
oh, okay. Well, let me make my argument, and then I'd love to hear yours, Eric. I just find that the network, you know, many years ago, Stephen Boschko kind of saw that cable was going to be a huge influence, and he thought the networks would be going to more edgier programming, more adult programming, more programming that broke the rules. And he created NYPD Blue, which was a hit.
Yeah.
For
and
ABC,
broke some rules.
And broke
sure.
some rules.
Yeah.
Banned from some markets early on, but it was a hit, so it eventually cleared. But that was an anomaly. I mean, Boschko's prediction didn't happen. Networks have retreated to such a degree that they're not willing to do anything terribly creative. I can only think of a couple of shows that I would even recommend checking out. And I'm not terribly optimistic about how good they'll be a month from now.
Eric, go for it.
Okay. Well, I'm not going to say I don't think that the crop of fall shows is amazing. What I say is the level of mediocrity has risen because Neil's been on his beat long enough. He remembers when we saw shows like The Secret Diary of Desmond Pfeiffer, which was a comedy about a slave working in the White House.
Right.
You know, I
oh,
mean,
my goodness.
We're not seeing shows that bad.
No, but what we are.
I remember when network TV was truly awful. And I will say to the caller, I'm not quite sure how standard cable kind of plays out in from different markets, mm-hmm. but FX has amazing shows. And it's in standard cable here in St. Petersburg, Florida, where I live. TNT has some great shows. I really liked The Last Ship, which was kind of an adventure drama. I've always liked Major Crimes, which was a spinoff from The Closer. It has really interesting shows, and that has been in standard cable tier in many places. AMC, as far as I know, in many places is in standard cable, and it has Mad Men and Breaking Bad. And the spinoff Better Call Saul is coming early next year, and there are some interesting things coming on network television, and have been on in network television. You know, The Good Wife. I've always been a fan of that show. Hannibal on NBC has always been kind of challenging and interesting. Parks and Rec. A great comedy. Even The Big Bang Theory, the most popular comedy on television, it's comfort food, but it is well done. So I would say that there's a lot of good television out there. You just have to kind of seek it out.
Yeah, but it's not inclusive totally, Eric. There's still a lot you're missing, but there's still some to look for.
Well, you can't get HBO and you can't get Showtime, but in the standard cable universe, I mean FX and AMC. Are right behind HBO and Showtime in terms of Emmy nominations and quality of shows. Breaking Bad won the Best Drama Emmy this year, and that's AMC, and that's standard cable for most systems that I'm aware of.
But even standard cable is expensive. I mean, there are college kids, there are blue collar that they can't even fathom paying $60 a month for. Basic cable. I don't know what it's like in Florida.
Well,
but.
The cable penetration rate is close to 90% in this country. So almost everybody's paying for it already.
Well, but for our Minnesota listeners, I don't know how many people know that we have the lowest penetration of cable in the country.
I didn't know that.
And I don't know what that says. And we're fairly economically healthy. But I think Minnesotans don't want to pay for extras. We're very kind of stubborn in our ways. So I think it's closer to 60%.
I didn't know that. That's interesting.
It's interesting.
The one thing when Eric was talking, this is very philosophical and it's a tangent, but I'm just going to say it. I've always wondered how shows will age. I went back when I was a kid, and maybe it's because I was a kid, but I loved the show Alf.
Sure.
And I went back and watched it a few years ago.
You said this was going to be a philosophical question.
Oh, my gosh.
And then you mentioned Alf.
No, Neil, it's horrible. That show ages so horribly. There's nothing redeeming about it 30 years later. And it pains me to say that because I loved it so much. I wonder what Big Bang Theory is going to be like in 30 years. Or Two and a Half Men.
What's funny is I had to go back and watch the ER pilot a couple of years ago when I was writing a piece about it. And I remember at the time we thought, MTV fast, quick cuts. This is a rapid paced show. This is the lifeblood of modern television. You watch that pilot and it is so slow. You're just
right.
One of the things you realize when you watch old dramas is how quickly the pace of editing has ramped up.
That's interesting.
And I remember watching, for example, an old Dragnet episode, and they were going to go arrest somebody. So they have a conversation in the police station. Okay, we're going to arrest somebody. And then they get in a car. You see them walk to the car. They get in the car. Then you see them drive in the car. Then you see them get out of the car. Then you see them walk up to this guy's front door, and then they arrest him. And in Law & Order SVU, they would have a conversation in the station house, and you would see them at the guy's house arresting him. They would cut out all that extra stuff because they would figure people are smart enough to know, hey, they got in a car.
That we went there.
Well, that tells you something not only about technology, but about our attention span.
Yeah.
I mean, Eric and I grew up in the MTV generation, and things started happening fast and furious, and we were ready for it. Now, of course, this younger generation, they're even ahead of, they're going a million miles a minute.
Off to the races. Maggie's on the phone on line one in Harmony, Minnesota. Good morning, Maggie. What show are you into?
Good morning. Yeah. Well, again, just kind of an anecdotal story on me. I was a big book fan of the Outlander series by Diana Gabaldon, and it has been adapted to a Starz show now, starting in August. And I was not at all into any HBO, any Starz, any anything. In fact, we're those Minnesota people that would never pay for it. But what happened was they got me on Facebook. They totally got me by previewing and teasing and getting all the hype around it on Facebook, and I became completely engrossed, and now I have Starz.
Wow, Maggie, that's really interesting. We got a couple calls and comments about Outlander. I don't know them. I'm more familiar with the book series, but I haven't watched the TV.
I'll let Eric
series.
Handle that one because I have not watched it yet. To be
Eric,
honest.
Yeah, I watched the first episode, and I think it's very well done. And I think this makes the point. So if you're getting Starz or HBO or Showtime, let's say you're paying $18 a month for that service. Now, if you go see a movie with a significant other, you're going to pay that much to see one thing one time. So what you're doing is you're paying the equivalent, and I hate to sound like a shill for the pay TV companies, but you're paying the equivalent of two people going to a movie one time to see all of HBO's content for a month. And you're seeing something like Game of Thrones or Outlander as a perfect example. That is movie-level quality in a TV show. And somebody at some point has got to pay for that. So if you want to see movie-level quality translations of a great book into a TV show with no commercials, then you at some point you as the consumer have to pay for it.
Right.
You can wait until it comes out on DVD. I'm sure they will put the first season out on DVD. You just can't see it when everybody else is seeing it. You'll have to wait until probably mid-next year. That's sort of the name of the game now. If you do want to have access to this great programming, you have to pay a little bit more for it.
And that's one thing that with the caller talking about how social media is reaching people.
Right.
A lot of these shows, people should who are not paying for these services but maybe thinking about it, should be looking out for opportunities to get free screenings. They do that a lot with programs now where they'll be available online to watch for free, at least the first episode, sometimes two, in the hopes – like our caller did. This is really good. Okay, I'll pay the $18
free
a month.
Preview.
And you know, some shows are also available for purchase through iTunes.
At a very reasonable rate.
Or through Amazon Prime. And again, you can spend $1.99 see an episode and decide if it's something that you really want to invest any more of your time or money in. And I understand, you know, my cable bill is covered by my employer, but it is it's over $200 a month.
Oh
so
my!
I understand.
Oh my! Eric.
Yeah. Well over. but I get almost everything.
We were talking about
because I have to be able to watch it.
We were talking about the Outlanders. We actually have a small clip. I'm going to play that here real quick. Here, do we have it? Nope. Oh wait, here we go.
When confronted with the impossible, the rational mind will grope for the logical. Perhaps I had stumbled onto the set of a cinema company filming a costume drama of some sort. There was no logical reason for actors to fire live ammunition.
All right, I'm interested. That was, I don't know exactly what was happening in that scene there, Neil. You know, Neil, when we talk about, you were talking about this earlier, you know, because everyone's like, hey, it's the fall season. You got the major networks, right? ABC, right. CBS, all of them. First of all, before we talk about some of the shows, what are they doing differently? There seems to be this thing where there's no reruns anymore, and they do this thing now where it's the... It's not the season finale, it's the mid-season finale,
right.
And then we'll come back in January, and I can't really follow exactly what the thinking is.
Well,
there.
Let's look at Breaking Bad, for example. It really benefited them to do this breakup season thing, because I think this is a little unfair, although, you know, it's maybe one of the greatest dramas. It is one of the greatest dramas of all time, maybe the best. But they divided a regular season into two, and they won two Emmys for it. You know, they counted it, even though it was really only one season, they were able to get everybody, you know, nominated twice. And but on the other hand, it one of the great dramas of all time should have at least two wins. So, but that's part of the strategy there. And I think there's a buildup and excitement to the start of a season. And they're thinking they can get two for the price of one, and also use that other time to promote newer shows that they're hoping to build up. And be successful in the future.
Well, the other thing I would point out too is that by splitting a season in half, they get more time to work on each half of the season.
Oh, interesting.
And one of the reasons why these shows are so much better, one of the reasons why Walking Dead or Breaking Bad or Mad Men is so much better than what you see on network television is they make a fewer number of episodes in a season already. They'll make 10 or 13 or 15 or 16. And then they have much more time to write every episode. They have much more time to shoot and edit every episode. When you're making 22 to 25 episodes of television between September and, say, April, which is the production schedule for broadcast network TV shows, and then you put in that people take kind of a huge break in December, you don't really have a lot of time to write scripts and to shoot and to edit the shows together. So particularly once the factory gets going, there's usually one episode that's kind of in pre-production where they're figuring out how they're going to shoot it and they're talking over and running over things. There's one episode that's shooting, and then there's another episode that's being edited down. And so it's hard for one creative mind to keep an eye on that whole process and make sure it's consistent. If you're doing Breaking Bad and you're Vince Gilligan, the showrunner and main producer, top producer, he can have eyes on every script. He can have eyes on all the shooting and all the rushes from all the shooting. He can have eyes on all the edits, and he can make sure that when that final episode comes out, you know, it's his vision. And it's as good as they know how to make it in the amount of time that they have, and so that's another thing that people kind of miss about the idea of breaking up these episodes and showing eight of them in a season, or showing eight of them in one part of the season and eight of them in another part of the season, which is what Walking Dead does.
Eric, let's go through it a little bit. Give me one, two, or three shows that are coming online here, or. Maybe already are here in the last week or so, that you are actually really, really excited about, that you see a lot of promise from.
Okay, well, there's a show called Gotham that's going to be on Fox, and it's basically, it starts next week, and it's basically a prequel to the Batman story. We see Bruce Wayne and we see his parents get killed, and a young Gordon, James Gordon, who is a detective in the Gotham Police Force, tries to comfort him, and it's basically a noirish police story about the rise of Jim Gordon and also about the rise of some of the villains from the Batman universe, like the Penguin and Catwoman and the Joker, and some new characters that have been created. And the first episode had a ton of atmosphere. It looked really interesting, but pilots can be deceiving because they have more time to make them and they spend more money on that one episode than they will spend on every other episode.
That's interesting.
So can they sustain that? I don't know. There's a comedy called Blackish that's going to be on ABC. That's, you know, a lot of people have been talking about it. It's basically about this upper middle class black man who has a family and is worried that because he's been successful, that his kids are not connected to their culture like he was. And so the plot of the first episode is that his son wants to have a bar mitzvah, and it freaks him out. And he's not quite sure how to handle that.
Okay.
And so Anthony Anderson is the star of that show. Lawrence Fishburne is an executive producer and a co-star on the show, and it's quite interesting. And there's another comedy I like. It's an hour long. It's on the CW, and it's called Jane the Virgin. And it's about a Latina woman who is has kept herself chaste. She's really young. She's had a boyfriend for a couple of years, and she's only going to have sex when she gets married. But because of a mix-up in her gynecologist's office, she gets artificially inseminated and becomes pregnant. It's she and her mother, who had her when she was a teenager, and her grandmother, they all live in the same house. And the grandmother will only speak Spanish to her daughters, but the daughters will only speak English to the grandmother, who understands them perfectly. And it's along with this whole, it's based on a telenovela from Venezuela. And in addition to getting some great comedy, you get this great look at three generations of Latinas living in the same house and doing some of the same things that I hear some of my Latino friends say that they go through. So those are three shows that I'm really interested in.
Neil, what would be your list?
Well, I think that those are all reasonable choices. There's a show, speaking of the Latino community, which I think the networks have to be applauded for at least addressing this year.
Mm-hmm.
There's another show called Cristela that'll be on Friday nights on ABC. The pilot's not very good. There's a lot of cliches in it. It's about a youngish woman who is trying to work her way through law school, and she gets a job at a law firm, and she deals with a lot of stereotypical jokes at her expense and situations. Like I said, the pilot's got a lot of cliches in it, but she is really good. She's a comedian that I don't think a lot of people have heard of, and I really liked her. She has a high likability factor for somebody who has not done a lot of acting. The pilot was made on the cheap. They even used the Tim Allen set for the pilot. But I think there might be something there. And it's on Friday night, so there's not a lot of pressure. I liked a sitcom I think has some promise called Marry Me. It's by the creator of Happy Endings, which was, I think, a really underrated show that only lasted two seasons. It stars his wife, Casey Wilson, who was also on that show. She's very funny. She's very good at playing sort of neurotic women looking for love and sort of making a lot of mistakes along the way. That's got a nice cast. I'm not sure, you know, it's very much like Happy Endings, which didn't do that well, but had a cult following. So I would say that. I also thought Gotham looked great, and I'm just as worried as Eric is about what the future episodes were like. We saw what happened with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which also had a great pilot, and then sort of you could tell that they weren't putting as much into future episodes. But in that same genre, I actually liked The Flash. On CW. I'm definitely not the audience for that show. It's definitely aiming for a younger audience, but it's done much better than Green Arrow, which is kind of its sister show. And it gets around the problem of a guy that runs really fast, making that visually interesting. they manage, at least in the pilot, to have a good backstory and have some interesting pseudo-villains in it. So I think that's going to be a nice little hit for the CW.
But let's also just take a moment to say that Batman and The Flash are back on television.
Well, you know, and that's a whole nother hour.
The more things change.
The superhero thing, yeah, is just crazy.
And the more they
well,
say,
well,
like,
Batman really isn't, because this is about all the stuff that happens before Bruce Wayne becomes Batman.
But they know so that the
what's interesting. They know what's the interesting is this fall we have a superhero show that is a very faithful rendition of a superhero story, which is The Flash, and then we have Gotham, which is basically a superhero story without the superhero.
Oh, interesting.
So which one of those will resonate with fans, or will they both? I agree with Neil. They're both among the best new shows, and I think, you know, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Suffered from what I just mentioned. They had to make too many episodes of that show.
Right.
And so you could feel in the middle of the season that they just could not figure out what to do.
Running out of gas.
And then towards the end of the season, it was like a roller coaster. Like every week they had something new happening because they hadn't really paced out the story well enough. And a lot of people who tried to hang in just dropped off because the middle portion of the season was so deadly.
And we have to give a shout as we wrap up our conversation out. 26th season now for The Simpsons, right? We can't forget they're still around. Do they have any more superlatives that they're gunning for this year?
they're the longest running sitcom.
Yeah. They're the longest, all of that.
It's pretty amazing. I mean, any show that lasts even 5 years kind of amazes me. And this is an interesting season. The Family Guy season premiere is a crossover episode with the Griffins visiting The Simpsons. I'm looking forward to that. There's also the Simpsons are going to meet the original Simpsons family from the Tracy Ullman show that looked completely different. They're still coming up with clever ways. You know, sometimes you watch and you go, "Oh, they've done this before," but not as often as you would think. They're still very creative, and they've got one of the best writing teams around.
Neil Justin from the Star Tribune, TV and radio critic there. Thank you for your time here today.
No problem.
This was a lot of fun. Eric Deggans from NPR, TV critic there. Hey, you're going to be in town in November for the Broadcast Journalist Series, chatting with me, Eric. So I look forward to meeting you there, and thanks for your time here today.
Sounds good. Can't
See
wait
buddy.
To meet you.